This is CX of M Radio, the voice of customer experience professionals.
Welcome to another episode of Press One for Nick. Your host, Nick Limsdahl, is the Director of Contact Center Solutions at VDS. Through conversations with customer service and customer experience leaders, Nick and his guests exchange insightful stories, best practices, and invaluable lessons they have learned along the way.
LinkedIn presents.
Welcome to the Press One for Nick podcast. My name is Nick Limsdahl. My guest this week is Lydia Clayton. She is the Assistant Vice President of Contact Center Operations and Center of Excellence at Cox Automotive. They are transforming the way the world buys, sells, owns, and uses cars. Lydia's background includes leadership roles in the Department of Defense, having served in the United States Air Force, and then the private sector for companies such as Raytheon Systems, Booz Allen Hamilton, and The Home Depot. Lydia, welcome to the Press One for Nick podcast.
Thank you. Thank you, Nick. It's such a pleasure to meet you. Thank you for having me.
It is my pleasure. So I always like to ask the very first question that I didn't prep before, but it's not difficult, is what's one thing people might not know about Lydia?
Oh man, that's a great question. Once people really start interacting with me, they realize how silly I am. And I think that's part of it. I've been told that I have such a presence that sometimes people are like, oh boy, it could be a little bit intimidating. But once they start to interact, they're like, oh my gosh, she's super silly. And I love to be silly. I love to have a good time. I love to laugh. So one thing they do know is I smile a lot because I just like to have fun. So I think those who know me now will agree, but I will go from the end of the aspect of people who probably meet me for the first time. They have no idea how silly I am.
But I appreciate you sharing that and apologize for not giving you the heads up on that.
It's up good.
So you have this background that I kind of shared earlier with the Department of Defense, and thank you for your service, and obviously the private sector. And I'm interested in how that experience in both those very diverse industries have shaped your approach to that customer service and customer experience within Cox Automotive.
Yeah, so I appreciate you saying that. Over time, it's one of those things as you go through in life, and while I was in the military, and I really thought about it then, but I think about it often now, especially as I've kind of traversed through the military sector, consulting, Home Depot, and over to Cox. You know, one of the main things that the military, you get a sense of, you have a sense of mission and purpose. You know what you do every day, and they do a really good job of helping you understand the value that you bring and why your job is important. And it may be something very mundane, something simple from your perspective, and you think, no one cares about this. Why am I doing this? But they have a good way of really illustrating why you are a piece of a puzzle. And when your piece is missing, the puzzle is not complete. And in the military, there's life and lives that depend on you showing up. So you pull that through in the private sector, and I find the same thing exists. I think mission and purpose is very important to me. And the people that I've worked with and coached and really served, I like to say, the people that I work for, that work for me, but I serve them, it's really about mission and purpose, because we show up and want to know that we're adding value. And so in every role that I'm in, I want them to understand the value that they play and the purpose that we're playing in terms of the overall company mission. That's what really builds retention from my perspective, because let's be honest, pay isn't always it, you know, and you show up because you want to contribute. You want to know you're making a difference, and tying them to the purpose, allowing them to see when they're missing or when they don't show up, how that impacts the greater team, and then allowing them to put their fingerprints on it to drive the change. And that's been one of the things. I think the military also builds great tenacity as well as adaptability. You learn that what you build today may evolve tomorrow, and be flexible enough to make that change. And the best laid plans, you're going to have to make some changes based on the current circumstances and situation. So that's been another one. And overall, service before self, taking yourself out of solutions. So if this means that this is going to impact your job, what is this impact to the overall company, and being able to step outside of it to make a decision that's best for the team and the company, and helping you to move forward beyond that. And I think that's been core to me. It's, it's not really about me. It's like, why are we here? And how do you play a part of it and making a decision outside of my personal needs? Because I feel like if you do the right thing, it always takes care. You will always get taken care of.
So we could just stop the podcast right there. It would be success. But we're going to continue this journey. You know, one thing that you mentioned was about not only serving, and my mission in life is to have fun serving others. Yeah. And I think there's a lot to that. But what you said is, some of the things that you're going to mention to your associates or to your peers, your teammates, it might not seem like a big deal to you, but it is a big deal to them when you will put them in a situation to succeed. Yeah. And then you show them and you tell others about the success that they've done.
Yeah.
And that what they've accomplished is important. And when did you learn that? And how are you adapting that and implementing that into Cox Automotive?
You know, sometimes I tend to think about what drives me, and I tend to think sometimes I'm not that much different than others, although we have different motivations. And I recognize that when I'm learning and I'm growing, and then I'm also feeding others, that I feel really good. So I have a lot of people that I coach and mentor. I am naturally wired to develop people around me because I believe that we can all do better together. And that is just how I'm wired. And as I noticed, every time I do that, just seeing how people respond based on getting poured into develop. And those people tend to want to follow me wherever I go. And that's when I realized it's not about the big things, it's about the little things that's impactful to them and how you're helping to support them. And they'll run through walls for you. And so I think I probably discovered that on a whim, on a fluke. And it just kind of started to realize it. I didn't set out for that. It's just based on who I am naturally. And then I am very excited to see them grow. So they becomes a circle and a whole cycle. Like I help them develop, they grow and develop, and they help me and I help them. So it's a big circular loop. But I think when I see them light up is as we kind of talk about what their goals are and how do I help them define what that translates to wherever they want to go. Because oftentimes they're not quite sure what they want to do. They just know they have some unique skills and they're passionate about something. So I think that's probably a little bit of a superpower that I have to really kind of listen to them and understand, have you considered this? Have you considered that? And watch them grow along that path. And then my hopes is that they will do it for others because and there's just so much opportunity out there. And if we're growing and developing every day, there isn't a problem that we couldn't solve.
And you leading by example, hopefully will lead others to lead by example.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's a lot to that. There's that cycle of just, because if you are a bad boss,
yeah,
maybe nobody has ever felt that experience of having a good boss. And so they're like, man, just bosses in general are pain in my butt. And I'm going to work.
Yeah.
I'm not fulfilling a purpose.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting that you say that. I just had a conversation last week and I was talking to some employees who talked about different experiences that they've worked in. And they've shared that first they said, well, this is the first time someone at your level has talked to me and asked me, what do I want? How do I feel? Ask my perspective and feedback. And I was still a little floored. I know I shouldn't have been floored about it, but I was because and you kind of asked me about the military, and going back to everybody matters because at the front line is where you make a decision, life-changing decisions, by the way. And you see all the ups and downs and different cycles of things that could make something better. So for me, it's baffling that they would have that experience that no one ever asked them how they felt about things and what they would see to improve on. To me, it's just so obvious. I'm a few steps away from where the real work is getting done. So I love to do the side-by-sides. And I get a lot of energy out of seeing what they're doing and seeing what they walk, walking a day in their life, because that tells me what my mission is to make their jobs easier. So you mentioned kind of leading by example. And so at that point, if they express frustration, I've kind of seen it and kind of understand, so I can relate to it. And sometimes I share some of my frustrating moments, so they know, like, we're in this together, and how do we kind of press forward together? Because I'm also a mother, and I know that the do as I say doesn't really matter. It's more so they're going to do what they see. So there needs to be congruency between what you say and what you do, and that ultimately builds trust.
Yeah. The last thing I want to say on this specific topic is, when you allow yourself to say, you know what, I've been in your spot and here's where I failed. So step in this lane over here and watch out for that pothole over there, because I know where you're going through and I've been there, and maybe not the exact same way, but I'm here for you, and I'm your champion. I'm your cheerleader to get you to where you need to go.
I think that builds some credibility as well.
Exactly. All right. So, you know, one thing that we've all seen in every industry, and specifically the automotive industry, is that they've undergone a lot of significant changes. And a lot of it's driven by customers' expectations. A lot of it's driven by the technological advancements. So how does Cox Automotive adapt to these changes to ensure that the expectation of that customer experience remains that top priority that the company's offering?
That's a very good question. So I've been with Cox now about 13 years, it'll be 14 the end of this year. And I've been fascinated just to see how the industry has evolved and how we've adapted. And in many cases, we are leading the industry because of the unique space that we're in. And we have B2B, B2C, and we kind of see from the beginning of life to the end of life about the vehicle. And our clients are actually relying on us to help them succeed. So in that unique nature, Cox Automotive, we continue to adapt based on the change in need. We're a data-driven organization, and we are very aware of the market trends and what's going on, and even areas that we really don't know what's going to happen. We're just constantly looking for different signals that allows us to adapt along the way. And so I will say specifically from the contact center space, one of the areas that I have the opportunity to really lead in is looking at how our customers are evolving, understanding what their needs are, and implementing solutions between capabilities or technical solutions or process changes to help guide them and meet them where they are. So over the last 5 years or so, I put together, I'm kind of executing a strategy, and that's, at the end of the day, the core responsibility is how to improve the client experience and the agent experience. And holistically, that is across people, process, and technology. And so we're looking at where our client is, where they are. And when you think about the auto space, there are multiple generations, right? You have those that's been in there for, and let's go from boomers to Zs, millennials, you know, it's really a diverse group of clients. And so that means they all have different technological needs. And how do you support them as they grow with their businesses and the scale of where they are? And that's a big mix. So it's a juggle, but it's important because the client is at the center of everything that we do.
In a competitive market, does your customer service stand out from the crowd? One way to offer a better experience is by moving your contact center to the cloud. But with so many options to choose from, how do you know which solution is the best for both your business and your customers? That's where VDS comes in and guides you to the best solution. They understand your clients' pain points, business outcomes, and goals. Then VDS designs, implements, supports, and provides 24/7 managed services. From start to finish, VDS is committed to finding the best solutions for your clients' needs. To learn more, go to www.govds.com or find a link in the show notes.
Yeah. So you snuck it in there and you just said it in like 4 or 5 words. I'm gonna pull back out a little bit, but you said Cox Automotive is a data-driven organization. And I think that is important not only to know the data, but act on the data, that as long as it's clean data. But how are you using that data-driven organization or data-driven insights to influence your approach on that customer experience?
Yeah. I'll give you one example that I think doesn't get emphasized enough as I kind of listen to a lot of experts, and I want to say workforce management. So in order to meet the client experience that we need, so for example, for clients that are calling in, they're expecting us to answer, or whatever channel we're using, they're expecting a response within a meaningful time frame. And let's be honest, we all don't have a lot of patience these days. So in order to do that, you really have to have the right people at the right place at the right time. In order to have the right people at the right place at the right time, meaning the right channel, the right skills at the right time that the customers are calling, you really have to have a lot of data that looks historically on your call patterns and be able to predict going forward where you need to staff at the end. So that is one of the ways that I am using to really help me meet that client needs in the channel of choice, as well as at the right time and balancing the overall expense, because at the end of the day, they're relying on us for their success. So that's the first part. Imagine calling in and you can't get anyone. That's frustrating. You're already calling because you have a pain point, and now you can't get anything. So you're double frustrated. And by the time the clients get on the phone and there's an earful, so that's now they're frustrated that they're giving you the earful. Now that you've probably lost about 3 to 5 minutes before you get to a solution. So how do we just relieve that in the beginning? Like, we know peak times, we know our seasonalities, we understand the market. And how do we ensure that at the front door, we're ready to service our clients? And that takes a lot of data. That takes a lot of data, constant tweaking, constant adjustments, and looking at our people and the skills and making sure we have a really good plan that we adapt in the day as well as over time.
I hear that word adapt again. You learned back when you spent some time adapting consistently. But I think that's so important, because not only are you looking at that information to focus in and drive efficiencies for the organization and for those employees, and hopefully doing more with less and collapsing and consolidating that technology, but hopefully it's finding ways to drive efficiencies for that end user and reducing that effort and creating that experience and hopefully solving it in the channel of their choice. And you can't do that if you're not looking at the data. So kudos to you. You know, when it comes to customer experience, we both know that it is a balance, and a fragile balance, between an art and a science. So can you elaborate maybe on how businesses can effectively strike that balance from your perspective?
I think a good part of that starts with the foundation. And I say that, first of all, in the role that I'm in today, when I jumped in this role 5 years ago, I had no idea how hard it would be. And balancing that art and science, you know, from a customer and perspective, you know, you call and you get an answer and you keep moving. You don't really think about everything that's required in the background. And just finessing the data and meeting the needs of the clients based on the data, that is an art and science, because every day changes. So where I would say with that, and I just kind of forgot one of the points, I'm going to come back to it. Mm-hmm. But what I would say with that is really not only understanding what has happened historically, but going back to adapting on what needs to happen going forward, but recognizing that you got to build a foundation such that you can scale and adapt along the way. So one of the core things that I'm focusing right now is really building the fundamental layers, ensuring that we have the data and reporting, and building a massive data mart that's going to really serve up tremendous value along the way. But also put the underpinnings and the capabilities where it comes into workforce management, quality training, reporting and analytics. And then you have the tools underneath to sustain that helps you to scale across the board. What I tend to notice sometimes is we put tools in, but we don't have solid processes. Or sometimes we may have the best processes that's ironclad, but then our tools can't support. And in any case, in both of those cases where we have gaps, we try to layer either put too many people or not have enough. And I think if you balance the art between the right skill and the right people with solid processes and tools that automate the processes you have, that helps you to balance and scale along the way. And many times we are doing a lot with people without the foundational elements in there. And that makes it hard to sustain and maintain that consistency from a client experience. It takes a while to build that bridge, but I think we have to start with the foundational elements and what are the core capabilities we need? How do the tools support fundamentally, and how do we scale across to just build more consistency and agility along the way?
Yeah. Yeah. With automation and self-service and process, it's crucial. And you have to not only just bake the cake, but now you're like, okay, well, that one wasn't perfect. What about the chocolate chips? What about the flour? Let me change the flour a little bit. Yeah. And looking at that consumer, even at that employee side, it's a horrible analogy as a bakery. But when it comes to that fragile side again, between the strike of automation and human, is as a consumer, sometimes I enjoy a really good experience when I have the ability to self-service and it's meeting my specific need. Yeah. And if I don't have that need, or let's say it doesn't solve my problem where it typically would, how do I take that context and bring it to the human as quick as possible to solve for that next step, even though it's not in the channel of my first choice? But how does Cox Automotive ensure that the new technology of that personal versus empathetic aspects of that customer interaction, where's that fine line? How do you work through that?
That is a great question. And it's a challenge that we'll continue to work through. In our business, because it is very complex and we're handling a lot of important transactions that with high value costs. For example, you purchase a car at the auction, then you want to make sure you can get the title. So in those cases, because that shows ownership of the vehicle. So some of those things are very high touch and require more support. But there are some areas where you're just trying to find out the status of where your service is in that life cycle. And that can be an easy notification. Or if you start on a channel, for example, chat, can you complete it on chat? So I will tell you, we have a few scenarios that we've been walking through and some that really lends well for just outbound notification. But there are some areas where they require more complex, that can turn into a complex interaction where you have to switch channels. We're having to decide how many of those things we want to switch channels, because that can create a frustration for the client as well. I think that the best use cases are those you could start and finish. You can truly finish a transaction. It may be a customer's preference to switch, but it's not that they couldn't finish. Yeah. And versus those things that you can start and then you have to get back on voice. Those are the things we tried not to really push from a self-service digitization up front, because that drives more traffic into the center and more frustration for the client. Because some of those things are very time sensitive. The things that are easier that I found where you get more customer satisfaction are the things that they can truly source the beginning to the end, and they don't need to pick up the phone. But the moment we take you 30% down the road or 70% down the road and make you channel switch, it creates frustration.
So, Lydia, as a consumer of a product or service, how does that make you feel when an organization does that?
I will tell you, I am the typical consumer that wants to finish it all online, but I want to finish it. So when I have to switch, it creates a lot of frustration for me, especially if I perceive that this really can finish online, because when I call you, I didn't get any more information. And that's the part where it frustrates me. I am delighted when I can go online and source for myself and I can get the answer and I can move on. The follow-ups are frustrating to me.
Yeah. And somebody who is a expert in the space, you know that the processes are available. You know the technologies are available. And sometimes you're just, I'm guessing as you are like me, you're just like, you know what? I know this isn't your fault, but I know that you can do this. I know that when you hung up on me, that you could have just called me right back because you didn't have all my interactions done.
That's right.
Which literally just happened this week. But, you know, we don't have enough therapy sessions to talk through it, but here or there. So, you know, what I wanted to chat too is that, you know, you're going to be talking about at CCW, not only on a panel, but at CCW Excellence Awards Gala, which is awesome, which recognizes innovative companies and top performing executives. So in your opinion, what are the key factors that contribute to excellence in customer service and in customer experience?
Yeah. So first, I should say I'm very excited about it, about both opportunities. And I seen the gala as an Oscar moment. So I hope to show up and be ready for it. So I would say the things that contributes to excellent customer service and experience, it's one, for a company to really understand what their customer experience ambition is. What do we want that to be? And as a customer, we would want you to display or show up the way you have proclaimed your ambition. And I think that's where it brings customer satisfaction. We really want what you say you're going to do. We want you to do it. But I think we have to define it as companies to really be clear on what we want that to be, to ensure that we can actually meet the customer's expectation. And I think the other part of that is really going back to the, and doing that consistently is going back to the point that I mentioned earlier about the foundational elements and how do you really build that bridge so that it can be repeatable and consistent. And I think that's how you win, because all things being equal, experience wins. And people come back because how you made them feel and you recognize them as a valuable customer. And it's not always about price sensitivity. So that's what I would say for that.
Yeah. And it's a lot easier to leave than ever has been.
Absolutely.
So if you have one bad experience with one representative, because that representative had one bad day, you are potentially going to lose a customer for life.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
A little bit scary, but you know, how do we make sure that we mitigate some of those risks?
Yeah.
Because some of them are preventable.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I agree with that. So I will give you an example. And this was yesterday. And this is, I was in an airport in Cincinnati and I heard that this is one of the best ice cream places. And we had to see if it's real. And it was. And it was a great experience. I wanted a vanilla sundae with caramel. And they had caramel, but it wasn't warm. I was like, anywhere you can warm that up for me. And he said, I can do that. And he's like, let me see what I can do. And he took that extra step and got warm caramel to pour on my ice cream sundae. For me, that was a delightful experience because it was outside of his normal duties. He heard what I asked for. He considered it and he figured out a way that, you know, even if he couldn't do it, the fact that he stopped and considered it and said, let me see, that right there says, okay, whether he did it or not, I will come back again because this person values me as a customer to really figure out how to satisfy me. So that was just a simple experience, but I've had experiences where actually on the same vid yesterday, whereas you asked for something, they said, I don't think we have that. Yeah, we don't have it. And it was like, but I see them serving it right up front.
You're a liar.
I believe you do. And I'm okay. I just let that be. And that was a different experience at that time, because I've always had excellent experience in that service journey. But it that was so different in two different examples, probably within 3 hours of each other. And the difference of let me see what I can do versus nope, I don't want to go any further. We don't have it. And I'm literally seeing it done two steps in front.
And from what I hear is both of those examples cost nothing.
Correct.
It just was a little bit of a mindset shift in saying, you know what can I do instead of what do I have to do?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that brings loyalty over and over again, because you tried at that moment. And I think that's what customers look for. Okay, you tried. So you talk about a bad experience. You call into a center and you don't get the answer that you wanted. We're not always upset about the answer we didn't want. It's really about how the situation was handled.
Yeah.
And how I felt as a customer. And it's explained like, I would really like to do this, but here's where I'm limited. And here's this situation. I tend to walk away with those experiences saying, okay, that was a bummer, but that agent made me feel better, and I can retain my business with this company.
Yeah, if the customer service representative hears me out and gives me an honest perspective, and almost like you said, pulls the curtain back just a smidge and saying, you know what, I'd love to do this, and this isn't company policy. However, it's probably the worst answer you should give, so don't say that. Right. But you know, actually hear them out and just give them a different perspective, and or saying this is what we can do, or if something does come up, I will reach back out.
Yeah.
But truly care for that individual on the other end of the line, because you're not just a number. You are an individual or human being that you're trying to help.
Yes. Yes.
Love it. Cool. Yes. Well, I can continue this conversation until contact center week, but that won't end well. Lydia would just tell me that she'll just hang up on me, but you know, a little bit about Customer Contact Week. They are awesome, and it is the leading event series dedicated to serving professionals within the customer service industry. It is going to be in Las Vegas, Nevada. It's shaping 25 years of customer service excellence, and this year's event will be at the Caesars Forum from June 19th to the 22nd. If anybody has not already bought your ticket, shame on you, but if you still have time, I can get you 20% off. Type in the word CCWLV_P1NICK for Press 1 for Nick. Lydia, thanks so much. It's been a pleasure, and I'm looking forward to your conversation at CCW in Vegas.
Thank you, Nick. It's been a joy.
Hey, listeners, can you think of one person who would benefit from the information you learned today? If so, please consider sharing this episode with them. And last, if you would like to receive all the quotes and book recommendations from all my guests, you can go to pressonefornick.com/podcast.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Press One for Nick. If you enjoyed the podcast, please subscribe and share. Until next time, focus on your customers.
Thanks for joining us for this session of CX of M Radio. Be sure to rate, review, and subscribe to the show, and visit cxofm.org for more resources.